Brady Saar, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services, Erskine. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network, CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson along with Jamie Dickerman, and we begin with Harvest Hotline, sponsored by U.S. Custom Harvesters, Ag Country Farm Credit Services, the North Dakota Mill, and Amity Technology. Bean harvest is all wrapped up for Rugby, North Dakota farmer Steve Friddle. He says an early frost took off a bit of the top end in the soybeans, though.
So right now I'm actually doing a little fall work on some fields. We've got edible bean and soybean harvest wrapped up and getting geared up to see if we can get started on corn. We had an early frost that some of the fields got nipped a little bit. We noticed the yield differences, but overall, I guess, pleased with the yields that we had.
Friddle says they had good weather throughout most of the growing season, and yields have been good as well.
Seems like a, I don't know if you want to call it normal year, but, you know, went through a dry time in June, and then July got some rains and really benefited more than we anticipated. We thought some of the yields got hurt. And in some fields, it did show up, but overall, we've been very pleased with the wheat and all the crops that we've harvested at this point.
Harvest is progressing in Stutsman County, North Dakota, but farmers are running into storage challenges and wetter corn than usual. Cleveland area farmer Ryan Wanzik said soybean harvest mostly wrapped up, but not quite complete.
So there's still probably like 25-30% of the beans in the field. Some people are dipping into the corn. We started corn last week. Yields have been about as expected, and moisture has been a little bit higher than we'd like, but not too terrible, 19 to 22. So able to at least get going.
Storage is becoming a bigger concern this fall, with many bins damaged by summer storms.
A lot of other places around have had a fair amount, some fairly significant bin damage. But, I mean, that does hurt us, too, because the elevators had bin damage, and then more and more people need to haul in because they don't have their own bin storage. And I think we're seeing that reflected in the basis. I mean, that's what's happening, is this basis level at harvest is going to get crazy just because nobody has anywhere to dump it. So, and then it's going to be wetter corn, too. So no one is going to have a place to go with it. It's going to be a long, drawn-out corn harvest, the way it's looking to me.
Sugar beet harvest continues across northwest Minnesota, with farmers working through damp conditions but making steady progress. Felton area farmer and Big Dog Ag owner Mark Philbrandt says fields are holding up well after a mostly dry finish to the growing season.
Well, they're coming off good. You know, I mean, we just run a truck for one of our local growers here, but they seem to be coming out of the ground good, weighing up nice, and sounds like the sugar's pretty decent. We ended up being pretty dry in the last about 6 weeks of the season here before we got going here, and then we were able to go a little longer because of the heat shutdown, so we didn't start at the first of the month.
Phil Brandt says soybean harvest also nearing completion in the Felton area, with some late season weather cutting into yields.
I would say anywhere from 20 to 50 would get just about all of them, but they're kind of all over the board. We had a little bit too much water early, and like I said, we really turned dry late. And that we definitely lost on that, and then we had a little bit of that nipping frost that came through that one weekend. So that just kind of took all the big ideas of 60-70 bushel beans turned right down into 35-40.
Harvest progress slowing down in the Devil's Lake region as wet weather continues to stall farmers there. Rock and Roll agronomy owner Jason Hansen says soybeans remain the biggest concern, with many acres still unharvested.
I know guys that have 10%, they're done combining, but they have 10% of their acres still out there that they can't get to. So they're waiting on, it's got to freeze hard, or else you're never going to get them. So it's to say we're two thirds done is, yeah, that's on fields, but it's not on acres.
Hansen says yields are mixed.
You're really happy if it's 40, the way it sounds, low 40s, is really good. So the problem is here is I don't know anybody who doesn't have the combine the field, and there's still acres of beans out there that they can't harvest. So when you take the average for the field, it's going to be down because you can't get to all the beans out in these fields because of the amount of water that's sitting in them.
That's it for Harvest Hotline, brought to you by Ag Country Farm Credit Services, Amity Technology, North Dakota Mill, and U.S. Custom Harvesters.
Steady rain moves into the region tonight into tomorrow with a few thunderstorms possible. The heaviest rain will move into Canada by early afternoon tomorrow, but scattered showers are expected to linger through Friday. Some areas could see up to an inch of rain by the end of the week, slowing down fall harvest progress. Morning lows will stay in the 40s to low 50s, with highs reaching the upper 50s to mid 60s. Gusty winds expected both tomorrow and Friday. The weekend turns cooler, with highs in the 50s and lows dipping into the 30s by Sunday.
World Weather Incorporated reporting rainfall from Friday through Monday will bring much-needed relief to parts of central and northern Brazil, improving topsoil moisture and supporting planting, germination, and early crop growth. The rain will also benefit previously planted crops, though more moisture will still be needed to fully recover from the long winter drought. Southern Brazil remaining very wet, and some drying will help winter wheat as it fills and matures. In contrast, Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay are expecting nearly ideal weather over the next 2 weeks, with alternating rain and sunshine providing favorable growing conditions.
Corn leafhopper's been detected again in Minnesota, this time in a cornfield in Waska County. Adults were captured on yellow sticky traps in September during the late stages of corn development. The insect, which can transmit stunting diseases in corn, was first found in the state last year. Experts say there's little risk to this year's crop since detections occurred late in the season. However, warmer fall temperatures and more frequent southern winds could lead to earlier infestations in future years, potentially increasing the risk to late-planted corn. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you are listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. President Trump's social media post suggesting a boycott on Chinese cooking oil has major implications for the U.S. soybean industry. However, Minnesota Soybean Growers Association Executive Director Joe Schmentek says it's biofuels policy issue, not a trade issue.
What's happening is we're having China, some of these other countries, either saying something's used cooking oil when it's palm oil, virgin palm oil, or it is Argentinian soybean oil, South American soybean oil, that, you know, it's their whole soybeans that are going over to China, getting crushed, and then China's sending us back the oil. In a lot of cases, barely used, barely used cooking oil. And it's about capturing these credits in California under their low carbon fuel standards.
The recent change to the 45Z tax credit includes a slight penalty for imported feedstocks. Smentek emphasized that domestic soy oil, which is a byproduct of the soybean crush, should receive the lowest carbon score.
You know, we have a lot of people that are complaining about what farmers are doing, but they don't realize just the complexity of what we're dealing with. And, you know, something like a used cooking oil could impact farm economy in such a myriad of ways. It really just shows how complicated this really is for our farmers out there, and how one little decision, which seems like not affecting farm policy at all, can have a huge domino effect and really crush some farmers out there.
According to Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, President Trump still plans to meet with Chinese President Xi later this month at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in South Korea. That's after Trump said last week that meeting may be off the schedule. Bessent also said he has communicated with the Chinese over the past few days and believes the dispute between the U.S. and China can ultimately be de-escalated.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says the Trump administration should be more transparent about its agreement with Argentina while also doing more to support U.S. soybean farmers. This follows President Trump's meeting with Argentina's president to discuss a possible bailout through a currency swap.
The Trump administration needs to provide more detail on the underlying terms of its agreement to aid Argentina, while long-term solutions are ultimately needed to make Argentina's economy sound. We should remember a part of the solution is more trade, not less trade. The United States and Argentina should work together to reduce trade barriers between each other and to turn away from China.
Grassley says soybean farmers continue to face challenges from Chinese tariffs, and the administration could take immediate steps to provide relief through the renewable fuel standard.
President Trump can do three things for soybean farmers right now. He can finalize the proposed rules to increase RVOs. Secondly, reallocate 100% of small refinery exemptions and maintain the half RINs for foreign feedstocks and fuels. These three policies under the renewable fuel standard will help drive down demand for soybeans, and it will help reduce some pressures to sell soybeans to China.
The U.S. Department of Labor's new interim final rule on H-2A wages is offering long-awaited relief to farm employers. National Council of Agricultural Employers President and CEO Michael Marsh says the change replaces a decades-old system that distorted farm labor wages.
The Department of Labor at that time indicated that they were going to use the USDA's Farm Labor Survey to establish those wage rates. And of course, the USDA's Farm Labor Survey has probably been done for, oh goodness, over 100 years. But the purpose behind the survey from USDA's perspective was to count the number of workers in the United States, not, of course, to establish wage rates in a temporary ag worker program. So as a consequence of that, you had a misuse of data by the Department of Labor in order to establish these wage rates underneath the H-2A program.
Marsh says the new rule allows for more realistic tiered wage levels based on skill and experience, offering billions in potential savings for U.S. producers.
One data would give you a wage rate of $12.31 for those temporary or seasonal agricultural workers coming from foreign countries. Or at level two, if they were an experienced worker, that wage rate would be $18.98. But they're also able to, North Dakota growers will be able to get an adverse compensation adjustment to the wage rate that they paid to H-2As. That adverse compensation adjustment is $1.27.
You are listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. October is being promoted as SCN Action Month. BASF Seed Treatment Product Manager Jeremiah Mullock sees soybean cyst nematode as a silent yield robber.
In our BASF sampling, the last few years we've had over 6,000 plus samples, and we've detected SCN in over 80% of those fields. So really, this problem is widespread and abundant, but often that yield loss is invisible. So I think this is a great time to get through the month of October for growers to take action and really proactively build a plan for the 2026 season that includes all the tools available to protect yield from SCN, including native traits, crop rotations, and a seed treatment like Olivo that really adds that early season protection from those SCN juveniles.
Mullock says seed treatments are part of a broader strategy for BASF.
SCN is going to be that one of those key prevalent challenges along with sudden death syndrome. And really, those are key challenges that are going to be some of the top two yield-robbing pests or pathogens in soybeans year over year. It really complements the total portfolio of seed treatment that really there's no curative measures for those two pests. And then any over-the-top fungicides really making sure you're protecting that late-season diseases that come in.
The Soybean Cyst Nematode Coalition has a new SCN Profit Checker tool that can help farmers determine the economic impact of the pest in their soybeans, and that tool is available online.
Checking quotes, December wheat Minneapolis, 2.25 lower to 551.25. December wheat Chicago, 2.25 down as well at 498. KC, December hard red winter wheat's down a penny to 487.5. December corn, 4.5 higher at 417.5. November soybeans are half a cent up to 1006.75. In Winnipeg, November canola is $7.10 per metric ton higher to 622.70 Canadian. Checking the cattle numbers, October live cattle up 7 cents to 241.90. December live cattle up 2, now 5, now 7 cents to 246.57. October feeders 65 cents lower at 379.52. November feeders down 85 cents to 380.47. December hogs up 45 cents, 83.60. February hogs 25 cents higher, 85.70. This is the Red River Farm Network.